Adventures in Research. A live volcano, a cooked fish, and the human breath are all part of the history of one of mankind's oldest and most useful materials. And then, when Michael saved his breath, the material grew by leaps and bounds, and a new industrial miracle happened. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science, produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today, telling you the story of one of the oldest products of man's ingenuity, glass. Its history goes back millions of years, back to when nature herself made her own kind of glass. In the flaming heat of a volcano, lime, potash, and silicates melted under the terrific heat, fused and hardened into rock, crystallized volcanic rock. That was nature's method of making a kind of glass known as obsidian. No one knows what man first discovered that the volcano's action could be reproduced artificially. It is even remarkable that such a complicated process dates back to antiquity, for man had learned the secret before the first century. Perhaps it happened as Pliny, the ancient Roman historian, wrote. The scene, a Mediterranean shore thousands of years ago. And a galleon from Phoenicia approaches the wild coastline. The lookout, amidst the gaudy red-striped sail, sees nothing. Nothing but tall, waving grass and the sandy beach.
We shall put to shore here. It appears safe from our enemies. Thou, Hesperides, take a number of men. Take spears. See if thou canst catch some fish for our meal.
It shall be done at thy command by Rehoboth.
Carathides, take the galley men. Prepare the shore for cooking the fish. Find firewood.
It shall be done at thy command by Rehoboth. Come, ye galley slaves, ashore. Come, or I'll take the whip to thy backs.
Stay thy anger, Carathides. Forget thy whip. Accompany the men to shore.
It shall be done at thy command. What does he know of galley slaves? The whip is all they obey. Hey, move along there! Move! Likely place. Now thou, get wood that we might build a fire. Not a sign of life. We could be devoured here by who knows what wild beast. Make haste! Collect the wood, or we shall die of starvation on this desolate shore.
Master, we bring wood.
Watch where thou lay it, or I'll have thy tongue, thou infidel.
Enough wood, master?
Enough. But on what shall we cook the fish? Something the noble captain did not think of, by Rehoboth. Not a single stone on this forsaken shore. The soda blocks we have in our cargo. They should make a good fireplace. Follow me. We shall get the soda blocks from the hold.
A good repast, Carathides. Now let us repair to the ship and make for home.
Make haste, thou infidels! Lift the soda blocks and carry them back to the ship.
Did thou say soda blocks?
Indeed, those we used to build the fireplace. But the soda blocks are gone.
Thou fool! They were valuable, and they have melted from the heat.
Yes, so they have. They have indeed. But I never thought that...
Melted to nothing, thou fool. Look at them. Eh? What is this strange substance here, where the soda blocks have melted into the sand? Here, thou... Pick up this melted rock. We shall return it to the ship and see what manner of substance it is.
What the Phoenician sailors had done was make a crude form of glass. The silica present in the sand, the alkali in the burned wood, and the blocks of soda had been fused together into a strange new substance. One that was destined to change the thoughts and habits of man. Yes, glass was born somewhere in the hidden folds of early history. And the art of working with glass is ancient, too. Decorative glass bottles dating back more than 4,000 years have been found in Egypt. How did they make these hollow glass vessels?
Watch, my child, as I wind the threads of molten glass around this core of sand. And when the glass has cooled and hardened, we will remove the sand core and have a glass vessel of real beauty.
These early glass vessels were not transparent. Man had not yet learned the secret of adding the other ingredients that would yield transparent glass. And then, perhaps as much as 3,000 years ago, someone got an idea for a new use for this odd material.
A piece of glass in the wall, Emides?
And why not? Surely the glass slab will let in more light than the stone wall.
But whoever heard of shaping glass thus, into a sheet?
It will let the light in and keep the rain out. You will see, Rohobus. Now please stand aside that I may shape it before it cools.
It was a laborious task, fashioning glass into crude shapes with tongs and other implements, or making hollow vessels by winding glass threads tediously around a sand core. And then about 300 B.C., another anonymous inventor made a discovery that was a turning point in the history of glass. It happened in the Phoenician city of Sidon.
Ah! At last the glass is ready. Come, Mercedes. Now cease stirring with that silly hollow rod.
Tis lighter than your solid rod of iron. Stand aside. Let me stir the cauldron one more time.
No. It needs no further stirring. Now let it be. Get the sand for the mold, and we will begin.
One more time, I shall stir it.
Oh, all right, then, stir it. But let us get on with it, or we shall have waited too long. Oh, look out now. Drip none of it here. Tis scalding hot.
Out of my way.
Oh, Mercedes, you are dripping glass from the end of that stupid rod.
Oh, so I am. I will blow through the rod and the drippings will fly off.
Fool, not this direction. Oh, cease, Mercedes. You will... Look. Why, it grows. As you blow into the tube, it grows. Oh, look, you have formed a glass ball on the end of the rod.
Aye. So I have. 'Tis most wondrous indeed.
Oh, quickly, Mercedes. I shall get me a hollow rod, too.
Glass blowing had been discovered. A man could dip a hollow tube into the molten glass, blow through the tube, then break off the glass, and he had a hollow ball. This principle opened up vast possibilities for new uses of glass. Later, the Syrians found a new way to make sheet window glass. Instead of the endless manipulation, they blew a glass bubble, broke it in half, and then rapidly twirled the half that stuck on the tube until the hot glass flattened out. For 12 centuries, it was the only type of window glass known, and easily recognized by a telltale circle left by the blowpipe in the center of the glass. Then came another significant discovery as craftsmen studied the art of glass blowing.
But look, Carabas, suppose a man should place a mold of some kind on the end of the blowpipe. A mold of iron, say, shaped like a goblet. Then, when you blow the molten glass, it will take the shape of the goblet, or whatever else the mold dictates. Here, let me show you.
With the mold, every vessel blown in the mold was identical in size and shape. While very old, this technique is the basic principle behind the modern mass production of millions of glass jars and bottles. The dawn of the 18th century brought improved equipment and techniques. With the growth of the American colonies, glass became one of the first industries established. And so we come to the year 1899, and a man named Michael J. Owens, who worked at the Libby Glass Company in Toledo, Ohio.
Ah, come in. Come in, Michael. Sit down. Well, what seems to be the trouble? Nothing wrong at the plant, is there?
Oh, no, sir. Production is going along very well.
Splendid. Well, now, what does my best foreman have on his mind?
Well, I hope you don't think I'm out of my head, Mr. Libby. But I've been doing a lot of thinking about glass ever since I first went to work as a mold boy at 13. Even back then, I had this idea. I used to hold the iron mold so the glass blower could blow the bubble into it, and I'd ask myself, how long has this been going on? Well, here it is, 1899, Mr. Libby, and for 2,000 years we've been making glassware the same old way, blowing glass into a mold with human breath.
Well, Michael, I know it appears sometimes that we're making no progress, but we're producing more glassware than we did last year, and next year we'll produce...
How would you like to produce more in a month than you now make in a whole year?
What? Why, how?
That's my idea, Mr. Libby. And I'd like your okay to go to work on it. I'd like your okay and some money.
To do what, Michael?
To build a machine to make glass bottles.
A machine to make glass bottles?
Yes, sir. I think I can make it work. And just think of saving all that breath.
Libby gave Michael Owens all the help he needed. And 4 years later, his machine materialized.
There it is, Mr. Libby. The boys call it Michael's merry-go-round.
Well, it's fantastic.
But you see, sir, these multiple heads revolve, suck up the molten glass, blow it into shape in these molds over here, and then shoot the bottle down this ramp.
Amazing. They look all right. Is the quality good enough, Michael?
Yes, sir. They're perfect. And something else. This machine makes more bottles in 15 minutes than a glassblower can make in a day.
Michael Owen's bottle machine was one of the most startling developments in 4,000 years of glass history. It made possible the mass production of glass containers in uniform size, shape, and capacity, and in the quantity needed for modern living. And the future of glass? Well, its possibilities have hardly been tapped. Glass roofing shingles, glass building block, glass top stoves, glass blackboards, glass shelves and kitchen counters, glass fabrics of all descriptions, glass insulation, glass chairs, glass tables, and, yes, even glass bedsprings. Yes, that's part of the story of one of man's oldest and most important man-made products. A story that began in ancient Phoenicia and still moves on in a never-ending adventure in research. That's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to Armed Forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.